Live,
a podcast of the cinema. I'm Alonzo Duraldi. You're Dave White.
Try to turn that down, will you?
I'm trying to bring hope to people.
Are you? How?
Just an interjection.
With an upbeat announcery, come on down.
A little excitement.
On the Price is
Right.
Some
thrills.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's what the world needs right now.
I'll tell you what the world needs now.
Uh-huh.
Science to be faster.
Yes.
A president that isn't a disaster. Here I am rhyming.
Look at you.
Did you say my name?
While
did
you
say
were
your name?
Barking all over me. Yes, I did. I'm Alonzo Duraldi. You're Dave White.
Yeah.
We're spouses. We're film critics. We host this show. And you're here. Welcome.
I am very happy that the people are listening.
I am delighted.
I'm in a mood.
Clearly.
Also, my alarm is fixing to go off in about... What the heck was that?
Is that your alarm?
No.
Is Kraftwerk coming over?
No, it was Gary Cotti playing Daft Punk. But I don't know how it wound up bopping out of my phone like that.
Well.
So my alarm is going to go off in 14 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I got to check on that cornbread.
Gotcha.
Y'all, I'm making cornbread. I'm rage baking.
And not like from the Jiffy box either.
No, this is for real. I'm making cornbread.
Yes.
This is not instant from a box.
No.
I'm doing things.
Mm-hmm.
My job. It's my only job. This and cooking. And washing the clothes in the sink. That's my job. What's your job?
You do so many things.
Yeah, I told you what I do. I do this.
My job is...
Here are the things I do. I do this podcast and the other four podcasts of the week. That's our, you know...
That's
the one... That's what's keeping me together right now.
I do all of our podcasts. I do two other podcasts.
Yes, you do.
I take down the trash. I go to the grocery store.
I make cornbread.
Yes.
And I wash every single thing in the sink. People didn't think about this when they moved into apartments with no washer dryer hookups and relying on laundromats. They didn't think, oh no, we might all be trapped in our homes and have to wash every single item of clothing in the sink and rig up a clothesline. At first, I was very excited about this. At first, I thought, I've invented the clothesline. When this is all over, I'm going on QVC to sell my special clothesline. I'm going to get rich like the lady that made the mop.
Mrs. Mop.
Joy Mop. That's her name. But now I'm just fed up.
What if I got you a metal...
I'm going to go stand out in front of a Baskin Robbins with a sign.
What if we get you like a metal wash tub and like a what's the thing called?
A washboard.
A washboard, thank you.
Well, then I'll just start a band.
There you go.
That's not...
You're going to Emmett Otter this
stuff.
Everybody
knows that's not for washing clothes. That's for starting a band. Listen, I come from hill people, and we all know these things.
Do they have washboards on Amazon? Is that a thing now?
No, they don't have anything on Amazon, except for like $5,000 containers of Lysol.
Right.
Yeah. There is the cinema, however.
Yeah, always.
To salve our wounds.
Inevitably, there is the cinema.
We've seen three films.
You've seen three.
You've seen five.
Yes.
But you're only going to talk about those other two ever so briefly.
And that is correct.
Yeah. But here's, I'll tell you, even though no big studio opened any big movie this weekend in a streaming capacity,
I don't know that anybody's going to from this point forward.
Oh, really?
Well,
no one has any plans to release anything
to
a streaming platform.
Disney is kicking Artemis Fowl to Disney Plus.
Sure, whatever.
But
was that going to open theatrically?
Yeah.
Oh, it was.
It was. I think that...
Is that a Harry Potter thing?
It's a YA novel.
All right.
It's been knocking around forever.
I'm sorry if anyone's... I am sorry in advance right now if anybody is hearing my phone go, ka-chunk, 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 because we're in this inane group text that never ends, and we're now discussing the sexual orientations of various breeds of dogs. But I have to keep my volume up so I can hear my alarm to pick up the cornbread out of the oven. And so now all our dumb friends, while we're doing this,
I put are our talking dumb friends about, on Do Not Disturb.
Yeah, but I can't do that.
Yes, you can.
No, I can't because I have to set. I have to check my cornbread.
Those are two separate things.
I don't know about that.
I'll show you.
Leave me alone.
When you feel like you can absorb any information.
I can't.
I'll show you.
There's no more information I can absorb today.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
I don't even remember.
studio movies. Yeah, I don't think... I think what happened was Universal put out three movies that had just started to get going in theaters, only to have the rug yanked under them. Four, actually.
Okay.
Invisible Man, Emma, The Hunt, and Never Rarely, Sometimes Always.
Is that Universal?
Yeah, Focus,
okay.
Which is Universal.
All right.
And then they went whole hog on Trolls World Tour because apparently it was already opening in it had already opened in Eastern Europe or something, and pirated versions were starting to circulate,
I see.
They couldn't push it back. So it was right. The heck with it. Allegedly, this is what I'm told. I don't know if it's true. Anyway, they wouldn't move the date. They had to full steam ahead it, so it went to streaming. At the moment, I don't think anything else major is headed to streaming. I think what we're going to be seeing is indies and stuff that was already going to be day and date, but now it's just going to be, streaming premiere. For example, Andrew Ahn's Driveways, which I saw last year and liked very much, was going to open theatrically and streaming on May 7th.
Yeah.
And it is now just going to stream on May 7th. And we'll review that when that comes out.
Right. In the absence of major studios putting things into the streaming stream, it is an art house palooza.
Yes.
Out there right now. Everybody is dropping everything into streaming. There's so much right now that I need to catch up.
Yes. I didn't even know about this movie called A White, White Day.
A White, White Day. Wild Goose Lake, some reissues of Doña Flor and Her Two Husbands,
A Thousand Pieces of Gold,
Visconti film, L'Innocente, or however you, I don't know how you say it in Italian.
L'Innocente, maybe?
I don't know. And you go to the Lemley site and there's 10 things.
Yeah.
Then these indie distributors are just throwing their stuff into the stream.
Yeah, Strand just put Straight Up out, which was at Outfest last year.
Grasshopper has all of their recent releases available to stream, including Vitalina Varela. And, their archive of all the Strobrié films, which is... I'm very excited about that. That's buoying. That's buoyant. That's making my mood a little more buoyant now.
Okay.
Because they've got,
Oscilloscope, I know, has Saint Francis and Then We Dance.
Saint Francis, yeah, those are both on the Lemley site right now.
Mm-hmm.
You can I could watch two things a day, and then next Sunday we'd have 10 movies to talk about.
Lemley, by the way, is an LA-based art house chain. It's LAEMMLE. If you don't live here, you can rent them from anywhere.
You can rent them from anywhere if you have an art house theater in your town that's doing this.
If you're in the United States, anyway, I guess.
Right. So, it's this weird glut of a lot of great films that now we just have to catch up on.
But, if you're watching, what's the Netflix show, Too Hot Island or whatever?
What?
Do you know about this?
No.
Oh, brother. We saw the promo for it on Desus and Mero.
Remind me.
The Island
is that the name of the show, Too Hot Island?
No, it's Too Hot to Handle or Too... I forget what it's called. It's the British... hot people on an island who can't have sex show.
I do remember that. Yes. I do remember Desus and Mero talking about that. Yeah. Now. So they put all these hot real horny people on an island.
Uh-huh.
And then the competition is...
There's a $100,000 prize that they can all split.
Yeah, but if they don't touch each other.
If they don't, yeah. If they don't, which weirdly
that's
makes... That's
depressing.
It's a very zeitgeisty show.
No, that's not what I want to watch. I don't want to watch a show about people not touching each other.
That's true.
I want to watch a show about people getting it on.
It's weird how...
A reality show where everyone has to do it. And you, the promise of Bachelor in Paradise is who is the best sex person.
Right.
But that needs to be a real reality show where real people are really doing it and the literal actual best sex person wins all the money.
Yeah. This, it's like we are now.
I don't want anything about where no one's touching each other.
We are now in the movie Cafe Flesh.
The only person I can touch in my whole life right now is you. I can't hug any of my friends. I can't be near anybody. Mm. You know, and you're fine.
Thanks.
You're enough.
Okay.
For now.
Great.
But like...
No, I on a recent...
Not into it.
On a recent Breakfast All Day, I told Christy that next time I saw her, I was going to hug her so hard it would adjust her spine.
That doesn't sound fun. That sounds like a threat, actually. Did you apologize after you said that?
No, I said it.
Did she think it was affectionate and nice?
She did, because that's how it was intended.
You're her friend.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the spine adjustment's a good thing. People pay for that stuff. Giving it out for free. But it didn't occur to me until just this moment how prescient the circle was. Because everybody on that show was
trapped in there.
Was socially distanced. Homes, like they couldn't even work out at the same time or use the rooftop jacuzzi at the same time.
Right.
Mm.
How come we don't have a rooftop jacuzzi?
Well, it's a good thing we don't, because we'd be under it, then I'm sure it would cause nothing but trouble.
Leak. Yeah.
We had one friend who had a rooftop jacuzzi. He doesn't live in that house anymore, though.
Remind me.
A friend of ours who was a documentary filmmaker and Emmy-nominated television editor.
What?
Years ago, we went to a party at his house. He lived off Overland.
I didn't
Overland.
Get anybody. I got in no one's hot tub.
We didn't get in it. It was a nighttime like housewarming party.
All right.
But like on top of, I can't remember if it was like on the roof of his garage or the roof of his actual house.
Was I there?
You were there.
I don't think I was.
It was like almost 20 years ago.
All right.
But I don't forget a rooftop.
You got
hot
a
tub.
You got a hot tub. I'm jumping in. Yeah. I wasn't there, or I would have been in that hot tub.
I'm pretty sure you were there.
Yeah.
Okay. What are we talking about?
I don't know.
Do you want me to start with the two that I have seen that you have not?
Yeah, because my alarm for the cornbread's fixing to go off. So
okay.
get to talking.
Okay.
While you continue your talkity talk,
mm-hmm.
maybe it'll be a smooth transition and we won't even have to turn off the microphones.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, so the two things I watched that you did not. A Netflix film that is being insanely popular right now just because I think it's new and it has some names in it people know.
Who?
Sam Claflin is in it.
Is it? It's Claflin.
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 Not to be confused with Schlafly.
And he was in Their Finest.
He was in Their Finest.
Which is such a good movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was in Boom Hunger Games. He was in Me Before You, whatever. that dumb movie where like he's the super rich guy.
Yes,
that one. Anyway. I like him in a lot of things.
Sure.
I do not like him in this because they have him...
What is this movie called?
Love, Wedding, Repeat.
No, what? No.
Yeah.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
Not to be confused with Live, Die,
not
Repeat.
Not tonight.
Sam Claflin is working overtime to remind you of Hugh Grant in Four Weddings and a Funeral. Like, he is just... doing the stammer, doing the adorable hair floppy stuff. Like, it's tragic.
All right.
And the movie is terrible.
Great.
Moving on.
What happened?
Let me set this table. Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically it's a rom-com where there's a prologue where Sam Claflin has spent a weekend with his sister's best friend, played by Olivia Munn, basically playing the role of the Andy McDowell unattainable American here.
Okay.
They have clearly hit it off. He hasn't really quite stated his
intentions.
Did
they do it?
They did not, but he's about to kiss her.
This movie is stupid already.
He's about to kiss her, but then he, like, fumfaraws his way and, like, messes up the moment, and it doesn't happen.
All right.
2 years later, the sister is getting married in Rome. Okay, you go check your cornbread. I'll keep telling the story.
Keep talking. Yeah.
And he's there, and Olivia Munn is there. But then there's also this complication where the sister has his ex who's all coked up, who shows up, and he's trying to disrupt things. And the sister asks Sam Claflin to, like, slip him a Mickey, basically.
What?
Like, put some sleeping drops in his champagne so he'll pass out and not, like, make trouble. But, of course, the champagne glass gets moved around the table, and somebody else gets dosed, and wackiness allegedly ensues.
Right.
And then they get to the end point of the story, and then they basically rewind to the moment where the glass gets moved around, and
you
go through it with various different people getting dosed, and it's never funny, and it's never charming. It's a little funny when, at the last version, Sam Claflin gets dosed. So he does a lot of sort of slapstick where he's, like, falling asleep while people are telling him, you know, these really sad stories about their mother dying or whatever. But it is the kind of thing where if you watch a movie like Four Weddings and a Funeral and you think, oh, anybody could do that. It's so easy. It's so effortless. It's so breezy. This movie shows you all the ways you can do it wrong. All the ways you can make these characters completely unsympathetic and uninteresting and irritating and not funny and all that stuff. It was so bad that when
I
it was
feel
done,
it in my fingers.
When it was done, I
feel it in my toes.
I went searching for Four Weddings and a Funeral. I found it on the Stars app, and I watched it again just to flush Love Wedding Repeat out of my system.
Yeah, because Four Weddings and a Funeral is so good.
It is.
What else did you watch?
I also watched
Cornbread's not ready yet.
Okay,
I gotta retie. I gotta set the timer.
Well, thank you for that update.
Yeah,
I also watched We Summon the Darkness, which
yes
is trying to be a satirical horror movie about satanic panic.
Oh, you know I love a satanic panic.
Well, you won't love this.
Oh,
so Alexander Daddario, who I really liked in We Have Always Lived in the Castle.
We Have Always Lived in the Castle is cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she plays this girl who, with like two of her best buds, are going to some heavy metal concert.
All right.
And on the radio...
Which band?
I don't think they ever say. Or if they do, it's one they made up.
All right.
So on the radio or in the news reports, you kind of, there's two things sort of lingering in the background. One is that there's been a string of serial killings that seem to be somehow satanically connected.
Okay.
And then Johnny Knoxville plays this like televangelist type who is like speaking out against heavy metal. And
that's
blah, blah,
how you
blah,
know
blah.
Something's wrong with your movie. Has there ever been a moment where Johnny Knoxville was in a movie that wasn't Jackass or Jackass adjacent,
mm-hmm.
where you thought, ah, yes,
I liked him.
The dramatic stylings of Johnny Knoxville.
I liked him in A Dirty Shame.
Okay, fine.
Because John Waters movies don't necessarily require
that's Jackass adjacent
acting necessarily.
John Waters is Jackass
sense,
adjacent.
I suppose so.
Fine. Okay.
I didn't see the movie about Graham Parsons' dead body that some people I heard was okay. I didn't see it.
I did see that one.
Okay.
It's
I have faith in Johnny Knoxville, but he has yet to quite deliver on that faith, I will grant you.
I like him.
Yeah.
I interviewed him once
Me
and
too.
He's a delight.
He is.
But
he's very charming.
The
his career
the
is not
the
quite
film work is
not quite gone the way
amazing.
One might have hoped.
Okay.
Anyway, so the girls go to the concert, they meet these three dudes, and they decide to hang out together afterwards, and they go to one of the, like, Daddario's parents' house
right.
that no one is at, that you know, in the middle of nowhere, and it seems like...
Oh, it's a house in the middle of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
Okay, cool.
And it seems like it's going to be party time, and then things get dark and weird.
All right.
This movie is tonally all over the place.
All right.
The scares aren't particularly scary once things start getting violent.
Okay.
And it is a fundamentally dishonest movie in terms of it has a twist that it doesn't set up at all. Like when the twist happens, you're like, okay, well then why did ABC happen
right.
if D is what is the actual truth here?
Right.
So it's, you can ignore it.
I will.
You should.
Yeah, because... I keep waiting for something like House of the Devil to happen again. Because that's great.
Yeah.
And this is not
like there's
nothing keeps happening.
There's a germ of an idea at this movie, but it doesn't really pay off in any way. So those are the two films I saw that you were spared.
Well, I wasn't spared The Quarry.
Why don't you explain it?
The Quarry is a film by director Scott Teams. He co-wrote it with someone named Andrew Brotzman. It stars Shea Whigham as a guy.
Yeah. He spends most of the movie using somebody else's name.
It stars Michael Shannon. Shea Whigham and Michael Shannon co-produced this film. There is also Catalina Sandino Moreno. There is also Bobby Soto and Bruno Bashir. And then there is a story about a guy who's a drifter and a arsonist and a murderer, and he meets a traveling preacher played by Bruno Bashir, and he murders him and leaves him in a rock quarry.
Wiggum murders Bashir.
Correct. Whigham murders Bashir, leaves him in a rock quarry, steals his van, steals his identity, goes to a small town in order to become the new minister of this church. And through a series of weird events that point to his need to be caught, because the only way you can explain his actions is in the context of this is a man who wants to be caught.
Yeah. Because otherwise he's just doing
Yeah.
all the things you don't do when you've just
He's
murdered
very
someone
bad at
or
crimes,
yeah.
or he wants to be caught.
Right.
And the answer is he wants to be caught.
Sure.
Because the job he takes up in this assumed identity is that of the minister of the little church, and he begins performing services and talking about forgiveness and redemption and all that Flannery O'Connor stuff. People are accused of a crime that he committed, and they're gonna be, put on trial in the
Church.
church because the town is so small, they hold their court in the church.
Yeah.
If the metaphors weren't bonking you on the head hard enough,
Indeed.
I feel a certain responsibility in these uncertain times.
Especially now.
Not to crap all over in indie narrative films. Like, let's be real. If this had come out and the world were
As it were.
in its normal way, and this had been dropped into streaming or just played day and date,
Yeah.
open in one theater for a obligatory theatrical release.
Yeah.
But
It wouldn't be getting nearly as many reviews as it's getting,
it wouldn't be
probably.
getting the reviews, it wouldn't be getting the attention it's getting.
Yeah.
But because here it is,
Right.
and it's got a big name attached to it, Michael Shannon,
To be fair,
we're paying attention to it.
it was going to be in competition at South by Southwest this year.
And it would have lost.
Yes, but I'm just saying it would have gotten a lot of reviews out of that and probably would have been up for, I believe they have a section of audience awards that is specifically about films made in Texas. And it very much has the feel of a made in Texas movie that they show at South by
Yes,
Southwest.
it certainly does. And I've lived in Texas long enough to know that kind of movie. And
Having programmed a film festival in Texas myself, I can smell it all over this one.
the saving grace of this not good movie is Michael Shannon. He is very cool as the sheriff of the town, who hates the fact that he is the sheriff in a small town.
Yes.
It's the opposite of Twin Peaks. Like, he's bored, he's irritated, he sort of just wanders around, kind of doing his job, yelling at people for not answering the phone.
He feels like everybody's ungrateful.
And he, and when he discusses the very nature of his job, when he talks about the fact that he lives in this small town, he's contemptuous of the fact that this is a small town. He said, there's a piece of dialogue where, and I'm paraphrasing here, he says, you know, I think people used to think it was cool to live in a small town, all charming and stuff, but that's not how it is.
Yeah, he talked about how when his dad was the sheriff, how he'd walk into places and everybody would wave and be happy to see him.
Right.
Because nobody's ever happy to see me.
Right. And so...
And Shea Whigham, given, I mean, even despite how sort of underwritten that role is in a lot of ways, I think he is...
He is suitably intense.
Yes. Yes. He's radiating a lot of things. I like it when character actors get to be leads. And I think he is... squeezing everything he can out of what the script is giving him.
I agree with you. But the script isn't giving much.
It is not.
And so I mostly just feel bad for these two guys and the rest of the, you know, talented cast.
Mm.
Because it's not... This has been done to death.
Yeah.
And I've seen it too many times. And I'm not into it.
Yeah.
The end.
In happier news...
And what is your happy news now that we are back from the little break we took so that I could go tend to the cornbread?
We could have just kept that on the DL.
No, people were expecting a second alarm and, you know, they...
Oh, okay.
They,
you know, want to have that other shoe not drop.
You know, I need to give everybody closure.
Ah.
It's a little too done on the edges and a little not done enough in the middle, and I don't know why. I'm terrible at things, probably.
Oh, no, I'm sure it's our old oven.
Sure. Blame it on something else.
Yes.
Other than...
I know you want to be the...
The state of the world today is why it went wrong.
The sin eater, whatever it is. The
sin. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, exactly.
No, the happier news is the Booksellers came out.
That's good. It's good. It's good.
It actually did open
We like it.
We did. It opened in New York, I think, like a few weeks back when there were maybe still theaters. But now it's... This weekend was when it was supposed to open in Los Angeles. Of course, now it is streaming via the, I'm sure, some Los Angeles art house chains. I don't know where it is. You'll find it. Use the Google.
It is not to be confused with
the bookstore.
With the bookshop.
Shop.
The Bookshop was a film starring Emily Mortimer, Bill Nighy, and some adorable child. Set in the...
Sam Claflin wasn't in it, but he could have been.
Post-World War II England, a tiny little village, and Emily Mortimer decides to open a bookshop because books.
Because she couldn't open a bakery in Maine.
Books are magical. They take you on a journey. There's this whole... Okay. Anyway, it's a crappy movie.
The Bookshop.
The Bookshop. There's this whole weird... NPR thing.
Well,
and they goofed on it once. They made a joke about it on the show Difficult People.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know,
James Urbaniak.
Your buddy. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Works for NPR.
His character works for NPR. And they're always.
Or PBS. Well, I forget.
They're always. No, it's. Is it NPR? Or is
I think
it
it's PBS. PBS.
One of the two. It's one of those places.
Somewhere that has a pledge drive.
Yeah. And there's at one point someone is talking about books. You guys, I just love books.
Well, there was a moment on the internet, and it never quite reached the like the ramming speed of the vinyl revival.
Yes,
but definitely like among people we knew and people who knew people we knew, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the things that
where are you going with this?
Things that pop up on your Facebook feed. There would just be somebody who'd be like, "You guys." Books.
There's this.
I'm getting so much reading done now. It's amazing.
There's this.
Not on a Kindle. Books.
Real books. People who obsess about the smell of books.
Calm down.
Yeah.
I mean, we're recording this podcast with like
in an apartment full of books.
Yeah,
so that's fine.
Yeah. But they could Howard Zend us at any second. Believe me.
But the thing is that there's a culture of literary coziness that I find insufferable, and I am not going to stand by idly.
It's the print equivalent
and
of
let
those,
people be terrible.
Of the people who just like get really into craft beer or small batch, you know, loose leaf teas or something.
Yeah.
All of these things are lovely and wonderful, and you can and should enjoy them. But maybe don't talk so much about them all the time.
That's why we started a food podcast on the Patreon thing, because I ran the risk of constantly talking about baking and cooking on this show.
And half of that show is like, y'all, they're putting out a new flavor of Crave.
I know, we're talking about movies on that, or we're talking about breakfast cereal.
And so, all of which to say, The Booksellers is not that movie.
Yeah, The Booksellers is a documentary produced by Parker Posey and lightly narrated by her. Like, she starts
like in the first 2 minutes, I think.
Yeah. But it's about rare book, you know, people. And the bookstore culture of specifically New York City.
Yes.
And how there were, you know, bookshops everywhere in New York for decades. And then they slowly started to die. And now what you're left with is, you know, sort of high-end antiquarian stuff. People who deal with, you know, Gutenberg Bibles and, you know.
All the people who got scammed by Melissa McCarthy in Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Exactly.
Those shops.
The, there is, you know, the film covers the waterfront. You've got the antiquarian people, you've got the binding people, you've got the people who just own, like, a warehouse full of them, and they, God only knows what they do with them. But,
you know, the Strand and the Argosy.
The Strand and the Argosy. The big, the Argosy's my... That, yeah. The three sisters who are all, I guess now in their, like, 70s, probably. They're sitting there very, you know, happily in the shop. And the interviewer says, so, how do you stay in business? And they said, we own the building. They said, we pay for the privilege of being here.
Yeah.
Essentially.
I love that. I love also how they talk about how their father started the store and basically...
In the 30s, 40s?
Yeah,
whenever
ages
and he
ago.
Bought the building early like then.
Yes.
Like just thought, I should own this building.
That's the only way anybody ever buys a building in New York anymore unless you're like, you know, Jeff Bezos. But what I also loved was the idea that all three of his daughters went to work at the store because he never... asked them to.
Right.
And in fact, when they wanted to work in the store, he was kind of like, I don't know.
He wouldn't hire one of them.
Yeah, like, can you type? Then no.
Then no.
You know, and so by, like, keeping them at arm's length, they all followed his footsteps.
Right.
Which is great parenting.
Reverse psychology.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because it is the law, Fran Lebowitz appears to talk about buying books from these places. And to mention again how the New York art world is very different than it was now.
Yeah. You know? She is the great, quote, giver.
Yes.
And if you ask her to be in a documentary, she will be in the documentary and she will...
Give you gold.
Say cool stuff.
Somebody once referred to, we were talking about, you know, interviewing different celebrities and the good ones and the bad ones. And somebody referred to Paul Rudnick as being the one-armed bandit of quips.
Yeah.
You would just pull the arm and ting, and you'd get like some amazing, you know, zippy anecdote.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is a movie that is about sort of the love of the objects themselves, but also of a culture that values those objects. You know, the idea of there having been all these bookstores because there were all these people who patronized them
books.
And wanted them to be there.
Right.
And you know, as and they talk about how, you know, one of the joys and challenges of book collecting was the hunt, and how now there's Amazon and a Libris or whatever, and there's no hunt.
If you have the money, you don't have to hunt. You can just get your entire...
It's right there.
Yeah, everything you want.
But the what I think is sort of the hopeful aspect of the film, because as much as you see, like, so many of these vendors and their clients are, like, all getting much older.
Correct, yeah.
You are also introduced to this kind of new generation of... You know, again, people who are probably not unlike the ones who sort of made vinyl come back to life, who sort of value...
People who collect and sell, you know, zines and... you
art
know,
books.
Art books and, you know, post-World War II, you know, avant-garde stuff. And, yeah. You know, hip-hop magazines from the 80s that people weren't thinking of as...
Valuable
or long-lasting, but are now... you know, archiving this moment in the culture. And yeah. So there's all of that. And my favorite thing about this documentary is that it is not precious. Yeah. It does not do that thing that I mentioned earlier.
You guys,
books. Like, it doesn't do that ever. I think maybe one person in the film says something about books being magical or whatever. And I was like, you need to get out of here. But other than that, it's very sort of clear-eyed and...
Yeah,
and just a wonderful you know, study of the last people standing.
I am pro book in the way that I am pro Blu-ray. You know, like, I do not trust these services that bring them to your fingertips. They're great and they're handy and they're convenient and there's a lot of good that comes out of them, but they are not to be relied upon in the long run for things that you always want to have.
Right.
For things you always want to be able to access, I would not trust anything.
No.
Except for the tangible, physical object that you can have and have forever. And so, you know, yay books. So this is a very New York movie, as you mentioned. And then premiering this coming Wednesday, the 22nd, on Netflix...
is a Los Angeles-based documentary about the same thing-ish.
It's a different, more sort of specialty beyond the antiquarian book, the adult book in this case, and that would be the documentary Circus of Books, which was the opening night film for Outfest 2019.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is the Rachel Mason, who is the daughter of the couple who ran Circus of Books for decades. And this was a fairly traditional, conservative Jewish couple who, you know, saw a good business venture and sort of wound up becoming, like, occasional First Amendment champions. The husband actually goes to jail at one point.
Yeah.
You know,
because they sold
it, because of a sting operation.
Lots of gay porn.
Yeah.
In the store.
But then the store itself also becomes this sort of de facto community center in the 80s where people are getting information about HIV and, you know...
We need to be very clear about the geographical location of the main store.
Okay.
Here in West Hollywood. You know, right in the heart of, you know, the queer part of the city. And although West Hollywood is no longer, you know, that epicenter of queerness.
Yes.
It was in the 80s.
Yes.
And all the way actually up until, like, the time that we moved here and a little bit after that.
Yeah.
Like, it was, I would say it didn't start, the demographics of West Hollywood didn't start shifting until about 15 years ago. Things started moving. And so now you don't have a majority gay population here. You have, like, everybody.
And there are a lot of other sort of gay enclaves.
And the rents went up so high that the young gays can't afford to move in here.
Yeah. So first they
only
went to...
Only us old gays with rent control get to stick around.
So first, you know, you had a lot of gays moving to, like, Echo Park, Silver Lake. And now you're seeing them in, like, you know, Huntington. Or not Huntington. What am I saying?
Highland Park.
You know, in different parts of the city like that. But yeah, for the 1980s, like... this was a hub, and Circus of Books was the hub of the hub.
The hubbub.
The hubbub.
The, but so, when you walked in, just aside again from the documentary itself, we live a block from this building.
Yes.
And it used, and it's no longer in existence. It closed. The building still exists.
And it is being, in the process of being turned into... what's going to be called Shishi LaRue's Circus.
Sure. Anyway, you would walk in, and on the left side were the books and the magazines. So you would, you know, and most of the books were gay themed, you know, books like, you know, queer literature and memoirs and study, you know, academic stuff and stuff like that. But then on the side of the, on the left wall was this international newsstand with like every kind of magazine that you want. You know, you could, for our purposes, you could go there and buy Film Comment and Sight and Sound, and I buy Art Forum and other art magazines.
In the in the doc, there's a line about how the New York Review of Books didn't really, wasn't a big seller for
but
us.
But Hustler was.
But they sold it.
Yeah. And so, you know, you could get those like really pricey European style magazines like Dutch and Purple and the ones like that. So
Vogue L'Uomo.
But you... You go further back down the wall, and that's where all the porn magazines were. And so you never had to be near the porn if you didn't have an interest in that.
Right.
And then on the other side
of a of sliding the, of a swinging door,
a swinging door, a wall divided the building, and there was a swinging door, and on the other side was, in the 80s, VHS tapes, and then DVDs and Blu-rays, but all porn, all kinds.
And, you know, accoutrement.
Yeah, like poppers and, you know, toys and stuff like that.
Personal lubricants and whatnot.
Things such of that nature.
Yes. Yeah.
So, anyway, when they closed, we lost our cool newsstand. And that just, I mean, I never... We were on KCRW the other day, and Madeline was like, what else did you buy at Circus of Books? And I'm like, no, seriously, we didn't go there to buy porn because it's boring and who cares? I was like, we literally went there to buy Sight and Sound and Film Comment.
And so, a thing that I tried, was trying to say on the show that went up getting cut for time was, like, there was an actual business model that existed where... you could make enough money on adult material that you could then lose money on, you know, like stuff that was like not super profitable, but was important to some people in the same way that when I worked at the Advocate for much of the time I was there before the company started getting sold over and over again. But for a very long time, they were able to remain an independent company, putting out a news magazine that was always expensive to subscribe to, never had like big booming newsstand numbers,
right?
Because they published Men and Freshmen and Advocate Classifieds.
Yep.
And the money they made off of those magazines made Advocate and Out, you know, like profitable to put out in a world where magazines like that, even then, were already starting to not be profitable.
Correct.
Even back in the day, the Advocate had the classified section in the middle of the magazine itself.
In the early years.
The early years.
In the 70s.
Yeah. And so that was sort of like, we want to sell you this news magazine, but we also have no illusions about the fact that you're really buying it because you want to like hook up with dudes in the classified section.
Right. In any case, the documentary itself is about the Mason family. And quite often it's about how reluctant the mom and dad are to even be a part of this documentary.
Because they were sort of embarrassed by...
A little bit. They were a bit sheepish about what they did for a living because it wasn't respectable.
Yes.
It was just profitable.
Yes.
And so they wanted to keep their children in this little bubble of, you know, suburban, you know, for lack of a better word, normalcy.
Sure.
And meanwhile, they operated two bookstores. There was another location in the Silver Lake area of Los Angeles that... made the money on porn. In fact, they even became a company that produced gay porn for a bit of time in the 90s. There's an interview, an on-camera interview with gay porn star Jeff Stryker.
Yes.
He speaks very fondly of them, you know.
You know, the director's brother at one point, you know, comes out.
This is a fascinating part of the film.
Yeah, when he's in college and like, the mother actually is not down.
She's not into it. Like, she's like, no, that's my job.
Yes.
My job is to cater to those guys.
In that neighborhood. Yeah.
I'm super, you know, pleased by their business, but I don't want you to be gay.
Yeah.
Which is, honestly, that is a big big deal with straight parents. Straight liberal parents who say all day long, "Oh, I love the gays and
And
this and
my,
that," and then your kid comes out and you're like, "Wait a minute."
yeah, it's one thing when it's my hairdresser, but
Right.
yeah,
But you
but
know,
she eventually comes around and it's,
as good parents do.
yes.
And so and then the store goes out of business, and then
Yeah.
it slowly dies on the vine.
So it.
And it did so for a reason that is not exactly talked about in the film. The film puts the burden of this business's failure, ultimate, like, slow death, on the internet. And while that is part of the story,
Yeah.
it's not the full story.
I know where you're going with this, but I think it's a fair cop. But go ahead, say what you're going to
It's
say.
fair, but it's not everything. Circus of Books is one in a series of businesses along this stretch of Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood that have closed. We have so many empty storefronts that used to be entirely full of bookstores, cafes, other businesses, you name it, small, independently run businesses up and down this street. And now, empty storefront, empty storefront, empty storefront, empty storefront. And it's because, as you know, these greedy landlords who would rather watch a building be idle and
Right.
vacant so that they can write it off than to rent to someone who isn't going to give them the insane amount of money that they think they deserve.
Yeah. No. I mean, that's absolutely
And they
true.
are ruining the quality of life in this part of the city.
And they are. And you are absolutely right about that. I think, though, that if Circus of Books had managed to, if the internet hadn't come along and made it pointless for most people to buy pornography,
Right.
then I think they would have paid those higher rents because the location is so good.
Yeah.
And so I think that is a very much a secondary thing here. I think the
Sure.
primary thing is the death of that industry.
I can't help but feel that it's part of this wave,
Well,
though.
no question, and we've watched it happen,
So
and it.
I don't have all the numbers in front of me because I don't know these folks,
Yeah.
but come on.
I think I mean I believe me, we've both witnessed it happen in our own neighborhood, and I think you're absolutely right. But I think at the same time, in the case of Circus of Books, it was the internet, really, the principal thing that killed them. And it was not being helped by the fact that, yes, the landlords here are rapacious. Although obviously someone is moving into that spot. Like that is becoming
Well,
once we're out in the
someone with a
world.
lot of
Exactly.
capital.
Once we're out in the world again, that's going to be one of the few for lease signs that gets taken down in this neighborhood and turned into something another business.
Right.
But yeah, it's a really cool documentary. It's this family story. It's about this cultural moment in terms of the AIDS pandemic and gays having this neighborhood of their own and this becoming kind of a focal point. But also about the kind of rise and fall of adult entertainment, from the sort of boom period of the 70s and 80s, and then the internet sort of like making the whole thing go away. So it's covering a lot of different ideas there, but I think it does justice to all of them. And I'm for a first feature film, I think it's really impressive.
No, it's very sweet, and it's a bit scruffy when you compare it to something like The Booksellers,
Well, sure.
which is a much more polished
Yeah.
situation.
But also they get to shoot in like much more luxurious
Certain
digs in a lot of
they
ways in
yeah
The
they really do.
Booksellers. Except maybe the warehouse, But yeah, Sony, that's going to premiere this Wednesday on Netflix. Y'all should watch it.
Because I'm in a bad mood today. I have an anti-streaming recommendation.
Okay.
Here's a movie that's streaming that you do not want to touch with a 39 and a half foot pole. It's called For Those Who Think Young. And I'm going to tell y'all the story of how I watched For Those Who Think Young. This 1964 film is currently streaming on Amazon Prime.
Yes.
And I walked through the living room as you sat down to watch it. And the opening credits of this film from 1964 are glorious. Wonderful animated, like multicolored surfboards. It's like the Umbrellas of Cherbourg. Like, it's so cool to watch these opening credits. Second enticement, Paul Lynde is in this movie.
Third build.
Gay icon, Paul Lynde. Want to watch it? I tell you, hey, don't watch that now. Watch it with me later. I want to watch it with you. I sit down to watch it, and the charm evaporates the moment those credits are done. James Darren
Yes.
and Pamela
Pamela
Tiffin
Tiffin, yeah.
as early 20-somethings, at a college, and they like to go to the beach surf parties, and she's in a sorority house, and he's the rich grandson of the guy who owns basically the university, and she's not good enough for him, and the grandfather hates that, that there's a young woman who might take the money. And then there's this terrible little like burlesque bar joint next door where Tina Louise from Gilligan's Island does a va-va-voom sort of strip tease down to her,
Scanties.
down to her, lingerie.
Danced in her scanties, $10 a day.
And then there's like a beatnik guy played by Bob Denver, also would be on Gilligan's Island in a year. His girlfriend is played by Nancy Sinatra. So you're like, oh, all these people who are kind of groovy are in this movie. And then nothing happens.
A
And
great
then, and then.
deal of screen time is given to a comedian named Woody Woodbury.
That's where I was going next. Now, Mr. Woodbury, bless his heart, he's about 95 years old right now.
And still with
Still
us?
with us. And apparently he was like a comic of the old school. Like, he sat at a piano,
Yeah.
made up funny little songs, told jokes, like the kind of joke that your dad tells,
Set up punchline joke.
Guy walks into a bar and he says, blah, 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 blah. And the other guy goes, blah, 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 blah. And then the other guy says, blah, 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 blah. And ha, 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 ha. That was a joke. That was told. In movies like this of old. Then there's some surf beach partying and like a band that shows up and plays an interminable song that is essentially like, yeah, my girl, yeah, surfing, my girl, yeah. About 30 minutes in, I said, is it over yet? And you said, no, there's like an hour left. And I said, oh God.
And I said we can
An
quit
hour
whenever.
in, I said, is it over yet? You said, no, there's 30 minutes left. We can stop watching. I said, no. I'm invested. I have to see it through. I have to see if anything good happens. Paul Lynde is barely in this movie.
Barely in it.
Third build, barely in it.
The worst part is that I wanted to watch it for all those things you mentioned earlier.
Yep.
And about halfway through, I realized
You'd seen it once
I'd
before
seen it
and
before.
completely erased it from your head because it's so boring and lifeless and
Yeah.
inert and terrible and not even fun, not even bad fun.
The looking out for the Pepsi product
Sorry, not even
placement.
fun bad.
Yeah.
Oh, there's cool old vintage Pepsi stuff, and they go to an old-timey Baskin-Robbins as well.
Yes.
And it's a real location.
Yeah.
So that's
For those who think young,
fine.
by the way, was the Pepsi
Yeah,
tagline
so Pepsi
at
clearly
the moment.
had something to do with this movie.
Yeah.
Oh God. You are never going to do that to me again for the rest of your life.
I did not know what I was
We're gonna
putting
watch
us.
Strobe films now from now
I
on.
did not know what I was putting to. No. You
Yep.
are not pinning
You
this
did
on me
this. You did
because
it.
I could have
It's all
watched it
your
with. I
fault.
could have watched it without you, but
No.
you said no. Don't say that. I want to watch that with you.
Well, I love being with you. I love
Well,
being next to you on the
you have
couch,
no one to blame but
watching
yourself.
movies. I'm with you 24 hours a day now, but
Yes.
I'm thrilled by it because you're my favorite person. I married you for that reason.
One day we were going to be stuck at home together for months at a time.
Until you do right by me.
I am not taking the blame for this.
Everything you even think about doing is going to fail. This is strike one of quarantine. Fine. You showing me this movie. Three strikes and you're out.
You volunteered. my streaming pick is Four Weddings and a Funeral. It holds up. It is not
immune. Does it indeed?
It is not immune to cultural critique, but it holds up.
All right.
We have some.
I feel it in my fingers. I feel it in my toes. Is it toes or my bones?
Toes, yeah.
I don't know.
And if you really love Christmas.
Did you eventually go watch the music video for that Wet, Wet, Wet song?
I haven't. I need to do that.
Because, oh God.
I want to say I've seen it before, but I just don't remember.
It is.
Much like, for those of
the young. The apex of that kind of thing. First of all, they are, the band themselves, Wet, 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 they are dressed in extremely 90s clothing.
Of course.
And lead singer dude has extremely 90s floppity hair.
Uh-huh.
And then they just dunk little clips from the movie in it. Ooh. And he's like singing in front of like the movie being projected on a scrim behind him and stuff. It's the worst.
Somebody needs to parody that because that was the thing for a long time. Music videos of songs from movies where people would sing in front of like billowy fabric where scenes from the film were being projected.
Yeah.
OMD.
OMG.
No, I bet.
I know.
Okay.
I know. Letters.
Yes.
Tom says, great. Thanks to Dave's recovered memory, I have the trailer for The Fly 2, which had a creepy version of Mockingbird and freaked me the F out when I was 4 years old, stuck in my head. All kidding aside, I'm glad I made the right choice when I decided not to watch The Power, even though a local critic I admired in my teen years loved it. Keep up the good work.
Oh, my trailer of horrors was everybody's, which was Magic.
Oh, well, yeah. I was like...
Or the TV spot.
14, 15, when that TV spot started playing, in you know, before the movie opened, and I was like, oh my God. Thomas says, the animated film that you couldn't remember the title of, the one about a British couple in the midst of a nuclear attack, is called When the Wind Blows.
Yeah, I was close.
I recognized what you were talking about immediately because my dad talks about it all the time. I think he was really affected by it when he saw it back in the day, and he has fond memories of it. His insistent love of it has almost reached the point of family in-joke, but I've still never seen it. Would you recommend watching it at a possibly less weird and stressful time? Is it actually that good, or is my dad just nostalgic? I know barely anything about it, other than him saying, oh, that's so good, we need to watch it every couple of months. Ha 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 ha.
Thomas, I have never seen it, so I don't know. It is well regarded, but I couldn't tell you firsthand, so don't know, sorry.
Kat says, regarding the UK gig economy, we were discussing it last week when we were talking about...
Sorry We Missed You.
The new Ken Loach film, Sorry We Missed You. My American father used to work in the warehouse for a parcel delivery service, starting in 2003, where all of the drivers were on zero-hour contracts, and he, who was only on a 1,000 to 1,200 pound a month... I'm sorry, this sentence. All the drivers were on zero-hour contracts, and he, who was only on 1,000 to 1,200 pound a month, was the one having to decide which of them got to work on a slow day. And this was the company with the contract for delivering UK passports. Also, the thing about having to buy/hire a van made me think of my brother. He used to do delivery gigs for this company called Deliveroo. It's kind of like Uber for delivery drivers, so it lets restaurants offer delivery without having to retain drivers.
Like Postmates.
And when he first started, he had to work a certain number of gigs for free until he had paid back the cost of the Keep Hot delivery box with the Deliveroo branding.
Okay.
No, I have a movie for everyone to watch. It's called The Corporation. It's a documentary about corporations and how evil they are.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kat.
Yes, Kat. Thank you. Here is, why did you send me a cookie recipe with the rest of these letters? Just to send me the cookie recipe?
Yeah, that just, it was in the inbox.
I see. Okay. James has a list. I live in the Bay Area, and as such was one of the first in the country to get into the lockdown lifestyle. With the increasing craziness of our world, I find the weekly dose of your good humor and film commentary an even greater catharsis than normal. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
I even finally took the plunge and became a Patreon supporter, and I'm really loving the daily recommendations. Dave's pointer to the Marc-Andre Hamelin livestream was especially welcome. Thanks so much for what you do.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife, everyone.
comes,
we hadn't mentioned it yet.
Here comes the ad. Here's what happens on Patreon. You subscribe. $1 per month, up to $20 per month. Although the $20 slots are all full right
now. They are
now.
Booked at the moment, yes.
We only allow 80 people in that because there's like merch that gets sent to you regularly that is, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, where was I going with this? Okay, so $1 to $20 a month, whatever level you're at, decides what stuff you get. Extra content, extra podcasts, or items like t-shirts and mugs. And so we have at the $1 level, the extra podcast content is called Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife,
mm-hmm.
where we take an old movie or a double feature of old movies mm-hmm. and talk about them
yes.
for like 30 minutes, although...
we've gone longer.
We've gone longer because we did. We can't stop talking is really what this boils down to.
You also get LKRX at that level, which is what was being referred to
daily
in the letter
recommendations,
here.
Cultural recommendations.
Yes.
You get LKTV, a podcast about television. You
That's
get
at the $4 level.
Linoleum Knife and Fork, which is a food podcast hosted by film critics. You get Linoleum Nights, where we talk about any darn thing we like. And also that's the one where we say all the bad F words.
Yes.
How do they find it if they want to go to it?
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Okay. He has a list that needs knifing.
Okay.
Quarantine edition.
Okay.
He says, I have been totally uninterested in plague, outbreak, disaster movies, but there have been a few themes emerging that I do want to watch in times of social distancing. Theme one, let's all stay in. Persona.
Never seen it. It's one of my gaping absences, but I'll give you the credit for that one.
Ex Machina.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, love that. Moon.
Yes.
Carpenter's Apocalypse Trilogy, The Thing, Prince of Darkness, In the Mouth of Madness.
Only seen one of them, but I'll give them to you.
Next category, but I want to get out and meet people. Y tu mamá también.
Yes.
Away We Go. Which one is that?
Oh, I love that one. That's one with Maya Rudolph and John Krasinski.
I wish movies had less generic titles.
Yes, but I love that movie.
Away We Go could be anything.
True. But it's wonderful.
The Holiday. You don't like it. The Way, Way Back.
Oh, I like that one.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Way better than Downhill.
And then the next category is Split the Difference. 12 Monkeys.
Not a fan, but
I like
I get why people like it.
I like
so,
12 Monkeys.
Sure.
Yeah. Co-starring our scholarship committee pal.
Oh, that's true.
Not Brad Pitt.
No.
The delightful Madeline Stowe.
Yes.
Yeah. Encounters at the End of the World, which I have not seen.
I have not seen that either. It's Herzog, right? I want to say. Anyway, that's 100%. No, sorry, that's 90%. The Holiday, we're not down for the Holiday.
Yeah, it's the Herzog documentary from 2007. I was like, what? Which one is this?
Oh, wait, no, I did see that one. It's the Antarctica one,
yes,
right?
It is.
I did see that one. Yes, it's good.
Okay.
So yeah, you are 90% knife. I wrote a book about Christmas movies, and even I can't deal with the Holiday.
It's not amazing.
No.
One last letter from Dr. Steve.
If somebody wanted like high levels of Nancy Meyers cozy, where would you send them?
I don't know.
That gets complicated, maybe? Or Julie and Julie? No, that's Nora Ephron. How about The Parent Trap with Lindsay Lohan?
Sure.
Trying to go with a feasible alternative.
Last letter from Dr. Steve.
Yes.
A question for you professional writers. Something that's been gnawing at me. Posting on social media does not allow for boldface, italics, or underlining. That's true.
Mm.
What are the proper writing conventions when those are not available? You know, I capitalize. I go all caps on a title in social media just so people know that that's a title of something.
I used to do that, but then I'm on the Facebook group for the Flophouse podcast. And at some point, somebody was like, "Could we stop with the all caps? It's like you're shouting."
I will not stop with it.
No, it's fine. So
a song title, I'll put in quotation marks.
Yeah. I mean, technically speaking, you know, it usually boils down to like movie, book, television show titles are italics, songs, episode titles go into quotation marks. I generally don't put anything on it and I just let context take over,
right.
Or I'll put the year after it in parentheses maybe.
Right.
But if you wanted to put quotation marks around it, or if you wanted to put them in all caps, you could do that.
He continues, could you give us a refresher on what words are not supposed to be capitalized in titles? Conjunctions and prepositions, right?
Well, from you capitalize for some reason.
Yeah.
And I think, and like against, I think it's more stuff like in and of and...
Sometimes the that's in the middle of something.
A the that's in the middle of something. No, always
sex
a the in the middle
in
of...
the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, did you see the thing going around? F, Mary, Kill, the three dudes on Sex and the City.
Which three?
Big, Aiden, and Steve. I know my answer.
Oh, okay. Wait a minute. Wait. I think I got this. I would F, Big, Mary, Steve, and Kill, Aiden.
The correct answer is...
Uh-huh.
You are required by class warfare to kill Big.
Oh.
You mercy F Aiden and send him on his way. Even though, like, he's the big carpenter and all that kind of stuff. And that's all very, you know, sensual. But
you marry Steve.
Seems like a whiner to me.
Yes,
like
absolutely.
You give him one. Send him on his way. Go build me a table.
A shiffer robe.
Yeah. You marry Steve.
Yeah.
Because he's... the best.
Of course.
Yeah. Plus, when you marry someone, you still get to F. So, you know.
Yeah, Steve, you have a future
Steve,
with
Steve. Steve brings it the whole... Steve brings the entire package.
Steve is committed.
He's, yeah.
Yes.
Kind, thoughtful, smart,
yes.
Earnest, sincere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course you marry Steve.
Everything nice. He's nice. Steve is nice. That's
that,
all.
He's got that adorable...
I saw that on Twitter.
...scratchy voice.
Yeah, well, apparently you like those.
Good point.
Are we done? We're done.
I think we're done.
I have to go make dinner.
Okay. Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. Once again, that's patreon.com/linoleumknife for more of this. While you're online, check out our friends on the internet. Go to blutopia.com, BLEUTOPIA, the website of our friend Blue, who composed our wonderful theme music, and we thank him for that. Check out what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Check out my other two podcasts, Breakfast All Day and Who Shot Ya?
No excuses.
Why not trot over to The Schmoes Know and Dennis Edwin with Dennis Hensley and The Comics Canon and Sewers of Paris and All Things Cozy and Deck the Hallmark and The Big Fat Gay Podcast. And I'm currently listening to a We Hate Movies. It's very funny. I dip into them periodically, and they're always a charm. Also of the Flophouse. Very, very funny podcast. Love that one. Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. And it would be so great if you would leave us a 5-star review. It does help us in the world, and we would super appreciate it. We'll certainly read it on the air if we get one. Or next time we get one, we've had them before, I promise. You can also follow us on social media at Linoleum Cast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Why do I think I'm leaving something out? Oh, also leave us positive feedback in the many places where we stream.
Yeah.
Google Play and Spotify and CastBox and Podbean and thelounge.com and Stitcher Radio and all those places. And drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We hope everyone's doing well. We hope you all have a good week and, you know, maintain.
Keep your chin up.
There you go. Until next time.
Goodbye.